You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. What's up, guys? Jose Youngs here at MAFighting.com, sitting next to everyone's favorite soy boy, soy drinking hipster, Casey Lydon, with his quote-unquote hipster water. My God, you're just on brand today, aren't you?
This is delicious. Zero calories, or like five. This is great.
What flavor?
Yeah, I'm working out right now.
What flavor?
Wonderful.
Wrong answer. Anyway, with this is the A-Side Live Chat, or as Esther Lynn has called it many times, the extra live A-Side Live Chat, because we are live on the scene in Las Vegas here at UFC 248 Fight Week ahead of Israel Adesanya's title defense against Joel Romero and Zhang Weili's title defense against Joanna Jędrzejczyk in the co-main event. But as you guys all know, this is not our podcast. This is your podcast, so you can go to MAFighting.com, leave your question in the comment section. You can tweet us using hashtag the A-Side, or you can respond to us, because none of you guys even use the hashtag. You just respond to our tweets anyway. So, anyway.
Or just roll down your window and just yell.
Yeah, just yell really loud out your window, wherever you are, or just in your cubicle. Just go, Jose, and I'll hear it. So, but anyway, Casey, what's our first question?
First question. Beep, bop, boop, bop, boop.
Here we go. First question from, I wish I could train at TriStar. The People's Main Event postponed. Pick my question, Casey. So he really wanted you to pick this question. How sad are you guys that Edmund Shahbazyan versus Derek Brunson has been shifted off this weekend's card, reportedly due to Derek Brunson's health issue, to UFC on ESPN Portland April 11th? I think Shahbazyan is the real deal, but is Brunson a step up a level too soon? I tend to think so. Not everyone is as prolific as Izzy, who schooled people as he flew up the ranks. People tend to forget that Izzy is 30 years old and planned his career out very well, along with being uber talented. And Izzy has a decorated kickboxing background where he mostly won but also learned from a few losses here and there. The counter argument is that this is the UFC and their modus operandi is sink or swim. Look at how Darren Till got exposed when he stepped up to Woodley way too soon. So, yes, Casey, we are one less fight. We have one less fight this week, and not just one less fight. A, as this man called it, or woman, I don't know. The People's Main Event between Edmund Shahbazyan versus Derek Brunson. I was a little disappointed that we lost this fight on this card. I always like having not a normal contender fight, but this is like a really high-level middleweight fight on the same card as the middleweight title fight. So you can get like immediate reactions to, like, say Shahbazyan wins super impressively. You could talk to like Izzy Romero after. You just get their reactions to someone else in their division. But I guess this question is Derek Brunson just a step up in competition? Is the step up in competition too high or too soon for Edmund Shahbazyan?
No. No. That's what we do here.
Yeah.
He was he 3-0 in the UFC?
Something like that, yeah.
3-0. Three dominant wins, I think three finishes?
Let me find out.
Yeah, well, either way, it's like I think two definite like dominant first round knockouts. And is absolutely not a
he's 4-0. He also 4-0. Has a TKO win. He's 4-0. With two KOs or two TKOs, a submission, a split decision in his debut, but he also has a TKO in the Contender Series.
Yeah, this is...
And two of those finishes are sub-minute, and one of them is a minute 12.
This fight is a perfect fight. It's not sink or swim. Like, you have to fight guys who are really good at some point. Top of the food chain good. So, like, I don't understand. And, like, actually, I don't agree with the whole Darren Till Woodley thing. That he got exposed. Like, no, like, he lost. That's what happened. Woodley was the champ. He's a better fighter, and he lost. It's not exposed. He just lost to a better fighter. That's just how it goes. I don't understand this exposed.
I also like this matchup because looking at like, Israel Adesanya went 25 minutes against Brad Tavares. That was his first main event. After he won against Marvin Vettori on the Ultimate Fighter finale the day before DC Stipe won. And then Edmund also fought Brad Tavares and only needed 2 minutes 27 seconds to finish Brad Tavares. So he needed 4.5 less rounds to finish the same. I know, I get MMA math and this and that, but if Edmund did that to someone similar, already similar opponent and made it look way easier than Izzy, I don't see the argument that this is a bad matchup. They already have a similar opponent.
It's an absolutely perfect matchup. And I have some inside scoop on Mr. Shahbazyan. Actually, me and Esther Lynn, who's out of focus in the background right now, we actually went to Glendale Fighting Club this week, and we shot a training video and did the interview of Edmund. It was the first time I've been back in that gym since one of Rhonda's open workouts or media days. So it's been probably 3-4 years at least. And but it was, they were super accommodating. They were very nice. Edmund's awesome. Ed
seems to always be smiling.
Yeah, he just that was a lot of my interview with him, because I was like, dude, where's your mean face? Like, because I shot him holding, I shot him hitting, doing a lot of bad work, doing a lot of wrestling. Basically, they almost did a workout just for us, you know, just kind of gave us a little bit of everything, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, speed bag stuff, and just, he did some gymnastics. It was fun. Edmund is, he's a special fighter. Now, is he, future champ? I don't know. But without a doubt, he is already one of the best middleweights in the world at the age of 22, which is, it's just stupid. He's 22, and he's like, it's just, and he's already one of the best guys in the world. And even if he loses to Brunson, so what? No, is win or learn, bro. So he's got to fight a better fighter to find out where he's really at. And
I would be really curious to see, even if he does lose to Brunson, how he deals with the first loss. Yeah. I think you learn a lot about a young fighter, about how they deal. Like you saw Macy Barber lose to Roxanne Modafari. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really have an opinion one way or another on her reaction to it, but I know a lot of people were kind of turned off by Macy and her team's response to her first loss. Again, that was another veteran versus undefeated fighter whose goal was to become the youngest champion in UFC history.
And Edmund, he's in very public, like, kind of a it's not like he kind of explained. It's not like into the world if it doesn't happen. But yeah, he's going. He has 1 year. He has until July. Somewhere he said somewhere in July of next of 2021 to be the youngest champion ever. So he feels he's right in pace. He feels he beats Brunson, and then he has one more win after that. Everything lines up for him. But he knows, and he's very like, he knows I have to beat Brunson. So he's not like, I gotta fight this guy next. He just knows if I beat Brunson, I probably have one more fight, and then I have my chance to make that dream, to be that record coming true.
I think what's benefiting him too is he's winning quickly and he's not getting injured. The only hang up for that, it might not be a hang up, is if this Darren Till Cannonier fight had kind of actually come together, we would have, like, the winner of that would probably be number one contender for the winner of Saturday night. Well, we also have Paulo Costa up there. It seems like there's a lot of people to go through to get to that title fight. Like, he might be undefeated. He might just be like third in line at some for a while.
There's no line. It's like whatever the storyline is better. It's like you jump and like Jose Aldo wasn't number one in line.
That's very true.
He has a storyline, and they feel they can sell more tickets that way. So he has. That's why he jumps in line. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe by time next year rolls around, there's a UFC pay per view in Los Angeles. He fights at Los Angeles. You have the Ronda connection. You know,
he's Armenian, right?
He's very Armenian. Yeah. a whole Armenian. Yes. Glendale crew.
I remember, I don't know the exact publication, but it was an Armenian publication, went to the MSG card strictly for him.
Yeah.
I believe Kyle Chukagian, too, is Armenian, or has some Armenian.
Yeah.
So, like, they were there, but mostly for him.
Yeah. So, he has a lot of the same, I feel like a lot of the same coaches. I worked with Ronda, Ronda's wrestling coach, and obviously Edmund Tavarian, his striking coach, who he has been with since 10 years old. He told me he walked into that gym as a chubby 10-year-old trying to lose some weight to a karate class. And from there, he's just like, he's never gone to another gym. He's never trained under a different coach. And I was like, holy moly, it was like, since 10 years old. That's insane. But so back to the question.
Was this too much too soon? Pretty much.
No, this is what fight, this is, that's what
I
we
also
do.
Like, even if you look at rankings, even if you believe in the rankings, like, this fight makes sense on paper too, just based off of their trajectory in the middleweight division.
Yeah, and props to Derek for taking this fight. This is one of those risky fights, but he also, it's maybe, you know, if it has a fit.
Well, this also, like, I asked Roxanne Modafari about this before her fight against Macy, like, outside of the title fight, like, Macy had so much hype behind her, like, is this the biggest fight you could take outside of the title fight? And maybe that, I don't know if there's a lot of really, like, high caliber fighters in the middleweight division, but I think Edmund Shabazzian has so many eyeballs on him that this is one of the bigger fights Brunson could even have outside of, like, a number one contender made of it, or a title fight.
Yeah, I definitely feel people, like, Brunson versus, say, Brunson Cannonier. Yeah, it's two top ranked guys. I kind of, yeah, like, you want to see fight. That. You want to see that. But the vet prospect thing is just it's always a great storyline.
Like, even look at, like, I keep going back to this, but Rox has never been more popular since she beat Macy. So, like, say Brunson does win, dominates spectacular fashion, that's more eyeballs than Derek Brunson too. He builds himself back up. So yeah, couldn't agree with you more. This is perfect. I'm not as big on vets versus prospect fights as you. I don't mind them. I don't really like. There's a lot of them make sense, but this fight in particular, I really like this.
And it made perfect sense to be on this card, which is originally what it was supposed to be. I think it's now in UFC Portland, which is, I'm not sure where, it's probably the co-main event, I think. But it's unfortunate.
I can't imagine it wouldn't be a co-main event.
Co-main, I'm not sure what it was the main
event. The main event is Overeem and Walt Harris.
Okay, most likely co-main event makes sense.
Don't hate it.
So, good fight. But I also don't agree in the last part about Darren Till getting exposed versus Woodley. I just think that's just
silly.
Woodley was better.
Woodley was better. You can also tell Woodley scouted Darren Till. I think one of this is kind of a tangent, but I think Woodley's ability to game plan specifically for opponents is vastly underrated. Like when Darren Till, you look, he's trying to do that lead uppercut. Like he did a jab to a lead uppercut or whatever it was. And in that split second between jab uppercut, Woodley just exploded. So he knew that was coming as soon as he saw the jab, and then he saw him cock back the uppercut. Woodley hit that split second opening.
Yeah.
So it's he scouted his opponent, took advantage of it.
If anything, it just exposed maybe Till to maybe that 170 isn't his perfect, if it isn't his weight class anymore. That's about. Yeah. But you know what? Win or learn.
Win or learn.
I should write a book about that.
It's a good
winning,
title.
Winning or learning.
I think John Jones is on about that. UFC 247. You win and learn, but sometimes you can do both.
Classic John.
Anyway, next question.
Beep, bop, boop. Okay, question disappears. New question comes up.
From Lodovic, longtime commenter, even dating back to the former El Shadi Raimondi days. Playing possum. Hello, gents. I guess you're all pissed at Cutaleba, and I'm never going to pronounce that last name, so I'm not even going to try. Fight was stopped with both fighters still conscious, but who's the blame? Everyone is calling the refs for the refs' head as usual, but I wonder whether we should cut him some slack. Cutaleba was trying to fool his opponent, but at the same time, not to fool the ref, but I'd argue his opponent has a much better chance of assessing how much damage he's doing. So which one is it? A, was that an outright wrong strategy for a sanctioned fight? B, should Ian have talked to the ref about his intentions up front? C, should we burn Kevin McDonald on the stake for being incompetent and hire a new official? Thanks. I don't think it's any of those. I don't think that you want to burn the ref for being incompetent and hire a new official. He made a mistake. Mistakes happen. It was a horrendous mistake. It was one of, if not the worst stoppage I've ever seen inside a UFC octagon. I'd have to go back, but recent memory, I can't think of a worse one than that.
Before this, as far as high level MMA, the worst stoppage I've seen was actually Jermaine versus Aspinlad. Hated that stoppage. This one was worse. The Kudelaba one was even worse. It was I think I've gone to so many amateur shows in the Los Angeles area, and that wouldn't even fly in an amateur show. I think it was obviously a panic stoppage because I think what happened.
See the ref just kind of.
Well, I think because remember at the beginning, the whole thing at the beginning when they bumped chest right before they're in the fighter announcements, which that should have been, that was crazy in its own right, but the stoppage just kind of, people forgot about that whole, the chest bumping thing. And I think he felt, I don't want to say he felt like he dropped the ball on that one because there was no one, so he just kind of felt like I messed up. But so there was definitely a panic stoppage, I feel. And dude, Kevin McDonald? Kevin McDonald, he's a very good ref. He is. He's a very good ref. But no one's perfect, and refs do fuck up. And that's all it is. It was a fuck up. Own it. Make it a no contest. Run it back. And the whole playing possum and whatever.
Rope-a-dope.
I don't care. That may be bullshit. Maybe he really was doing that. Maybe I think he actually did get hit. And so, I'm going to kind of flow into this. And to me, he clearly was playing some sort of possum slash rope-a-dope because he had this whole it was actually bad acting. If you just watch his head, who gets hit and goes like this? It's not cartoon. You saw it one time. Yeah. That's what I mean. But Kevin Lee's legs are going out.
So that's what I was going to say.
His legs were there. He was just moving.
If you listen to John McCarthy and Josh Thompson's podcast they do, John McCarthy, the obviously former ref now, Rush Bellator, went in on Kevin McDonald, and his whole thing is when I'm watching a fight and I see someone get hit, the first thing I look at is their base. If their base is sound, they're in it. if their legs are going all like Bambi, like jangly legs, like that's when I start to get closer. But like watching that fight, he might have been like doing this, but his legs were planted, they were steady, they were good. So he goes, if I saw that and I looked at his legs, I'd be like, this is nothing. Like John McCarthy went hard on the paint on Ken McDonald. He's like, this is unacceptable, this and that. Like, and he talked a lot about how looking at the bases, as a referee, if you see someone get hit and they're like might be out of it, look at their legs because they just might be kind of dazed. But if they're still in it,
you don't fake the legs. You can't. Like, I mean, actually, Anderson Silva did this all the time, but his legs were always there. Like he get I forget what fight. Maybe it's Weidman a little bit. He get hit like, oh, I'm hurt.
That was the first Weidman one.
But his base is still there. He's not like, you know, he's not falling out of frame and everything. He's right there. It was a bad stoppage. It was the worst stoppage worst early stoppage from strikes. There's been really bad stoppages from submissions that weren't locked in. But it was the worst early stoppage from strikes I've ever seen in the UFC. Like
Chaz Kelly, Bobby Moffitt.
Yeah, like one of those.
Where it was like, he's like, you were out. He's like, no.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
I couldn't remember his name, but
there's been a few of them, like guillotines that I didn't.
Didn't Drew Dober get one like overturned and something like that? I couldn't remember, but Abdul Razak Al-Hassan fight against Saba Hamasi the first time at UFC 218, Hamasi like went in for a takedown or something like that, and I think it was Herb Dean, I can't quite remember, thought he was like got punched and fell, so he like ran in to stop the fight when he was completely fine. He was just shooting him for a takedown, but then they immediately rebooked the rematch. Like even Dana White was like, that was just a mistake.
Did Dana, I haven't watched Dana's scrums, did he say anything about that fight?
I haven't.
A lot of
lot of that narrative left after the main event. It kind of overshadowed like that, like everything else. But so I would say none of these.
Yeah, none of these. But Kevin McDonald, very good ref. He just made a bad decision. That's okay.
Everyone makes mistakes.
Like, as long as you own it, that's all.
Like Herb Dean's made a lot of mistakes. Yeah. People consider him one of, if not the best referees in the world.
I think John McCarthy is a great ref, and I've seen him make some bad decisions. It's like, I get it, man. There's two men just trying to knock, like literally decapitate each other.
You really hated that Aspen Ladd stoppage?
Oh, it's horrible.
I didn't think it was.
She took no damage at the beginning. Because that's the thing. Because I've been to the ref courses and stuff, and one of the big things is about how much cumulative damage they've taken up to that point too. Like, say if Aspen Ladd had got like beat up in the first round a lot, and then the second round she gets dropped right then, like. You have the ref gives you a much shorter leash, basically. But that was like the first strike of the fight.
Same she was like on all fours, facing the other way, right?
Yeah, but looking up.
Sure.
She was like, it's like she's actually defending herself properly, like, and so, like, it's a bad stoppage. I mean, like, and but the Kudelaba one worse.
Yeah, that's one of the worst. One of the was Josh Barnett. Frank Mir was kind of playing possum too. Like, I think it was Barnett had him in like the clinch, like. Against the fence, and when he landed a knee, Mir dropped to his knee, dropped down to the ground, because he wanted to go to the ground. So it's like he got dropped, but and then the referee jumped in and stopped it. And Mir was like, "I'm fine. Like this was the plan."
Well, I don't remember the details of that one, but Verdum, Fedor, when he came with the overhand, Verdum was like, "Oh, I'm hit." I mean, he got hit, but he went to the ground because like, oh, I'm hurt. Come here, Fedor. Try to get me. Try to finish the fight.
He tried to do that with Mark Hunt a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Mexico. I think it was like UFC 180 or something like that.
Yeah, you can rewatch Fedor Verdum, and he gets hit, and he kind of falls, then Fedor just jumps right, because Fedor just at that time just didn't give a crap. So, all right, fuck it. And
just jump in. Just slinging.
I'll jump in the most dangerous guard in the world.
Bad stoppage. Yeah. Real, real, real bad stoppage. Did it? There's a lot of that. There's a lot of playing possum.
Yeah, a lot of playing possum. I think in MMA, we don't see that much playing possum standing. That's what it is. Most guys, it's a lot of jiu-jitsu guys who play possum in the sense they're hurt and they go to the ground. We don't see too much, like, I'm hurt and still standing. You don't see that much in MMA.
Derek Lewis Jr. Dos Santos fight, when he was I'm hurt, and then Jr. ran in. And then there's that one moment where Derek Lewis just uncorks a bomb, and Jr.'s like, shit, and then just like falls down, and then he's like, all right, he's fine. I almost fell for that.
But as a ref, from what I've learned, when like Derek Lewis got hit those body shots and he acts hurt, the ref can stop it right then because, like, whoa, you're acting hurt. But
yeah, you're right.
Luckily, the ref gave Lewis enough respect as a fighter They're like, no, you're still in the fight. You're just hurt right now. That's it. And yeah, and obviously Derek Lewis overplayed the hurt so he can throw the big counter. The most classic example ever to me is actually Pete Sell, Scott Smith.
But he was actually
hurt. He wasn't selling.
I
know he wasn't actually, but but the sense like, oh, I'm hurt. Like then you come. That's why people do it. That's why people play possum. So you get, hopefully you get a Pete Sell type knockout, you know? Yeah, Scott Smith was hurt, but that was kind of the blueprint.
He collapsed after that.
Yeah,
that was the last part. Like, if he missed,
he was done.
That was the only punch he could throw.
Well, he probably dislocated his shoulder because he threw that thing so hard, his arm would have gone out the ring.
Anyway, next question.
Beep, bop, boop.
From Hefe01.
Hold on. Where are we at here? Beep, bop.
Computer's malfunctioning.
I got Slack open.
Rookie move. Blah. From Hefe01, longtime commenter. Option, where will the next hotbed of MMA emerge? Obviously, when things started, the main suppliers of high-caliber athletes were mainly Brazil, Japan, and the USA. Then Europe got on board, and recently we have seen more regions get in the action, mainly the Oceanic region and the African continent. With Zhang Weili fighting this weekend, the amount of money the UFC is pouring into China, it seems will soon be another region to watch. Any other areas you are aware of that we should watch for in the not so distant future? Well, like what other named all of them? Let me see.
I think we have a pay per view coming up in a couple of days with a couple of guys from a little island outside of Australia called New Zealand.
New Zealand. I think he said like the Oceanic region.
Dude, he's like you just
the African continent. We have just named all of the regions.
We have good fighters in the Western Hemisphere, the Eastern Hemisphere.
Like China, I think is the only like. There's not like until like Wiley showed up. There's no like always elite level like Li Jingliang is obviously a phenomenal fighter, the Leech, but he's not. I think he's like 14th or 15th right now. He's like the only Chinese fighter.
Yeah,
Russia obviously has a lot. There's no Indian fighters really.
Combat sports just aren't a big thing in India.
Apparently not.
It's just not.
Isn't that where Super Fight League takes place?
But it did take place. I would not be the person to ask about the Indian fighting culture, but
I have no idea.
It's just not.
I'm just trying to think of places that don't have like a star or like at least a name. They can like Mexico doesn't has Yair is Mexican. I'm trying to think of areas.
Stars, but Mexico's fine. I mean, they have Grasso. That's what I'm saying. They have two top fighters. They've had Mexican American champs.
I'm saying at least regions where they at least don't like. Mexico has like recognizable names. Brazil has recognizable names. Like even Suriname has a recognizable name all of a sudden. Like Europe, Russia, like the Oceanic region, China, Japan. Like they all have. Even now, Africa has two champions, and like Francis Ngannou could get a title shot after his next win.
I'd be interested to see, but as far as the African continent goes, when will we get a top tier MMA fighter who actually trains there? A lot of these guys are raised there, but they never train there. Like Izzy and Ngannou, they didn't get their martial arts training. Usman, they didn't get their martial arts training from Africa. They're African descent, but they didn't actually train there. But with the success of African fighters who gone to other countries and train, obviously that's going to bring more awareness in Africa. So I think that's just inevitable. Don't know when. I take it back. I know a lot of people don't consider Morocco Africa. That's another discussion. They go, just Europe. But like, there's a lot of Moroccan fighters who are already in the UFC.
Have him fight at UFC 247.
Yeah.
So I can't remember his name, but he was the first fight of the night. And he was like, UFC Morocco.
So we have Moroccan fighters. But India, actually, India is the big one. India's like, man, it's just not, I don't know.
And when they have, like, when... Just from the outside looking in, when there's like a big star in anything in India, like they are deity over there. Like I've interacted with a handful of Indian wrestlers, and like they say when we go to India, it's like night and day than any other part of the world.
When is the U.S. getting some big cricket stars though?
Honestly.
Cricket rules all in India. Hey, let's go to a video.
I was trying to see is Arjun Buller, is he from? He's Indian, right? But he's Canadian.
He's Canadian. Yeah. He's Canadian. He's a, I think, that descent. He's a chic.
Right. Like Jinder Mahal.
Yeah.
Jinder Mahal from WWE is from, like, I don't know what province, but he's from Canada.
I don't know if we've had any native Indians in the UFC.
I can't think of any off the top of my head.
No. Not like, maybe, like, yeah, like maybe American Indians, but not yet.
Do we have a video question?
Yes, a video question.
That's what I heard when I came here. I came specifically. Hopefully it's from a certain bearded gentleman.
Well, we'll
a mustachioed man with the soothing voice of an angel.
Oh, I love angels.
You like Velvet? Because his voice is smoother than that.
Roll the clip, Casey.
Hello, this is Eduardo Ariño de la Rubia. I'm sending my question from Foster City, California. This weekend at UFC 248, MMA fans get the opportunity to watch some of the most physically gifted and exciting fighters in the sport battle it out. The main event, pitting Yoel Romero versus Israel Adesanya, particularly pits two incredible athletes against each other. Yoel, in particular, fascinates me. There's an incredible video from early in his career in which Romero ankle picks his opponent, causing him to fly through the air in a manner that seems more out of a choreographed action movie rather than combat. MMA's full of moments like these, where the fighters transcend physicality and do something truly extraordinary. Which MMA moments stick out in your memory as transcendent of the physical form? Which fighters most often remind you that although we all may be created equal, we clearly do very different things with what we've been given? Thank you very much.
My God.
That is a handsome question. That was a soothing question. I mean, like,
I feel a lot of emotions right now. Like, I feel alert because I looked at this man's eyes, and that just immediately you're stunned into silence. But then his voice was so soothing, I want to go to bed.
I'm sweating.
Casey's sweating. The hot girl behind the camera looks puzzled.
Yeah, the hot girl. She's just like, she's deleting her Tinder account. She's like, I know who I'm going for.
She heard Eduardo was doing it, and that's the only reason she stuck around. But anyway, he did ask a question.
Question.
What moments, like, transcended the human physicality that you saw?
Off the top of my head, the two of them right now, DJ's armbar over Ray Borg in the fifth round. Try that in the gym. Go ahead. Give it a try. You'll break your neck. And, Yair's knockout of Korean Zombie with 0.1 second left of at 24 minutes, 59 seconds, 0.9. That was like just like the timing to go through a 24 minute.
He was losing.
Wasn't dominating, but he was going to lose the fight and do somehow go, oh, I got it.
Not only was he losing, but like he had to be carried out of the octagon.
Yeah.
Like his coaches were holding him up.
That's what I mean. Like, so like he didn't throw that, you know, he threw that like at like a broken body, he threw in that, and like I
just—that's very similar to the Smith knockout, where he's like, "That's the lap." Like if he missed that, it was over.
Well, it literally been over. Yeah, yeah. Those are the on the top of my head. I always think about another one I love always is actually not in the sense that it's like just exceptional athleticism, but just like just to know to wear it all, just to throw it right then was Fedor's knockout over Arlovski. Arlovski was winning. Arlovski was actually winning the fight at that time. He was just winning a stand up, and Arlovski goes, "Oh, I got him! Here comes a flying knee!" And just out of nowhere, the reflexes and the speed and power and accuracy that Fedor threw that overhand on Arlovski. I was there in the arena. Esther was cage side, ringside for that, and it was just still like I go, I don't get it. Like watch it again in real time, not knowing what's gonna happen, especially kind of. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, those are a few of them I think right now.
When I think of moments that where I was, I saw it and I was like visibly like, oh shit, like that was insane, was when Cormier fought Hendo, Dan Henderson, I think it was UFC 173, when Henderson was just getting like tossed like a bag of potatoes and then he like turned his back and tried to like run away. And DC just like grabbed him and just like sweeped him and then pulled him back. He's like, ah, come here, old man. Like that to me was like the definition of getting big bro.
Do you remember the crowd for that event?
Yes, I do.
The crowd was literally booing DC for being a bully.
Well, it's because they beat up Dan Henderson.
Dan Henderson's lost before, but it's the fact that he just kind of he bullied him. He's like, just like big brother, and like you're old. That's
similar when Cormier scooped Barnett in the air.
I think that was in, I was like the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah, too. And that was like for the championship. And that was like, he was still like fairly new to the game. Like that was, to me, everyone kept talking about this Daniel, like I knew who Daniel Cormier was, but he had so few fights, and people were already then talking about like, oh, when the UFC buys Strikeforce and he goes to the UFC, he can't be champion. Like, could this man be the one to beat John Jones? Like, because he's so small, they thought he could cut. Because also at that time, people were talking about, like, well, Fedor's a small heavyweight, like Daniel Cormier's. Remember they called him a Black Fedor for a while? Yeah. So it's like, if he goes to the UFC, could this man beat John Jones? Like, I don't know about that. And then after watching that Josh Barnett fight, I was like, maybe. Like, yeah. Maybe. It's a damn good fight. A lot of the other crazy. Anderson's flying knee against Bisping was pretty insane, even though it didn't finish the fight. Just the timing of it. Like, the accuracy of a flying knee to the face.
Hey, they pick up your gum shield. What?
Yeah. And then just, like, just ate it. Romero doing the, when he fought Machida. Remember when he, like, jumped up in the air and then landed down really low? Like, he was going to get the takedown. And Machida was like, what the shit? And all of a sudden, he jumped back up and punched him. Like, he jumped up, landed, guys, low as possible, and then punched him. And Machida was just like, what is going on right now?
I mean, I'll just go back even very recent. I mean, Izzy versus Whitaker. Those exchanges, like, when you watch them in real time, like, they're just kind of like, oh, they're just throwing a bunch of bombs, I guess. But when you slow it down, you see so many movements, so many, like, I think someone, the first knockdown in that fight, in that, so into the first round, when Izzy knocked down Whitaker. He, I don't know what happens. He throws like a left. It gets blocked. But then Izzy Whitaker counters with a right, and he brings his hand back and blocks it, and then just plants and boop. It's just like, it's like the balance, coordination to do that in this firefight right there within inches of each other. It's just, I don't get it. It's just, and obviously that's Izzy just being a great athlete and having just 75 victories in kickboxing at a very high level. So that's I know there's got to be a
Barbosa's wheel kick was uber impressive.
I still love watching it's probably the best 7 seconds of MMA ever. Is it 7 seconds? Ronda over Katsangana.
Oh, the wherewithal to like just
She catches that flying knee. They do some crazy cartwheeling. Both of them are on their head, and then she catches that arm bar.
That was bananas.
I can still watch it. I mean, I see the mistakes Kat made, but the fact that mistakes are made all the time, the fact that Ronda just saw the mistake and didn't let anything go, it was
unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. Still, man, come on, I got to think of a couple more. Just like things like that's not human.
There were a lot in, like, the early day. Like, Fedor getting dropped on his head against Kevin Randleman.
Yeah, things like that. Because we've never seen that before. Like, oh, that's normally, people get dropped on their head, they die. But this is
the first time. Not just dropped on their head, like, spiked by, like, a wrestler on the top of his dome.
And he winds up getting a Kimura, I think, like, fucking, like, 30 seconds later.
Yeah, so Fedor did a lot. The Rampage, like, slamming, was it Arona?
Yeah.
When he got him in the choke and then slammed him down. Michael Venom Page breaking a man's skull with a knee with a Cyborg. And Cyborg's face was so shattered he couldn't fly home.
Remember the x-ray they had?
Yeah. Like, you just see where his knee landed.
Yeah.
It's like that was so accurate. Like accuracy is stunning to watch in that fight. Similar to what I like moments where someone gets like they're so accurate it doesn't look like they hit hard, but it like wobbles their opponent and then they take advantage of it. It's like Korean Zombie's like flying knee on Poirier, and Poirier's like, oh man, and all of a sudden into a Darce choke. It's like split second like thought, like they think it and then they just do it. Is unbelievable to me. Like if I landed a knee on just Poirier, I'd be like, oh man, like what do I do?
I'm sorry.
Like I do it. I'm just like Izzy said it. I watched like pretty much every press conference with Izzy before that. Like he goes, when he hurt Brunson, you see him kind of like looking for an opening. Mm-hmm. Where like if I in a magical world where I punched Derek Brunson and wobbled him, I would just be like, I'm just running to start to try to finish him. And Brunson would be like, nah, you're dumb. And then he'd just kill me. But like split second thought process like that in the middle of a firefight, like you said, unbelievable to me.
Yeah, I,
So it may not be the most physically gifted thing, but it's still mental. Win or learn. That's the moral of the story. Do we have any other video quest submissions?
We're ready for another video.
All right, sure, why not? Boop, 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 boop.
All right. Roll the clip, Casey.
Hello, this is Eduardo Ariño de la Rubia. I'm sending my question from Foster City, California. Severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2, better known as 2019 novel coronavirus or Wuhan coronavirus, is a public health emergency, if not already a global pandemic. The virus seems to spread quite easily, and the infected can transmit, even when they're asymptomatic. Global events which bring together thousands of people are being canceled routinely now. From the partial cancellation of the Arnold Classic to the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, people are recognizing that hosting these events creates a dangerous environment for transmission and further contagion. To your knowledge, what is the UFC strategy for minimizing probability of being a nexus of contagion this weekend and at upcoming events? With fighters cutting massive amounts of weight and going through a grueling training camp, do you know what level of coverage the UFC's health insurance policy will provide them? If you could opt out of going to the event and doing all your reporting remotely, would you? Thank you.
Debbie Downer.
Well, there was a lot to unpack in that question. The hot girl in the background is still just mouth agape, just being like, I guess Ed is kind of a bummer.
Oh, man.
So the coronavirus is kind of messing things up for the world right now, Casey.
I just saw right before we went live, I can't remember where, I think in Chicago. I'm not sure where, actually, but somewhere in the United States, some basketball team, college basketball, have been canceling games already. Well,
there was an article on I read this morning where the headline was Seattle is a ghost town right now. Like, because I guess there was like someone got sick or someone died there, and now like all of Seattle's like everyone is on lockdown. Like even if it's self imposed, like they're just not leaving their apartment.
We got into Vegas last night, and I'm really interested how it's gonna be this weekend. But it was a Tuesday night, not a big deal, but like it was so oddly slow last night. We saw these restaurants closing early. Usually they open like 2 or 3 in the morning. They were locking up shop around 11. So I was like, whoa, dang. And like, it just felt different last night.
It really did.
Even to the point, and it's in my head to like, after we ate, like usually like, I eat. It's like, I went to Esther, like, we should wash our hands. And so like, I'm in the bathroom. Like, you go to the bathroom, you wash hands, you leave. And now I'm in there, like, I wash my hands. I go, no, I'm going to stay here a little longer. You know, you're like, it's just. At least for me, I feel like it's just in the back of your mind all the time now. And but back to that the question though,
I don't know the UFC's exact plans. I don't know them personally.
But they need to be making some plans,
because wasn't there? Don't they want to do a Tuesday Night Contender Series in China? Or like in Asia at some point? Like that ain't happening.
But that's just in China. They're gonna be. I mean, we're just a couple of press conferences away from the CDC from like sporting events being canceled, and since that no live crowd, we're still gonna have sporting events, I think, but
like one championship head behind closed doors, right? Like,
yeah,
I also heard that the title fight between Geraldo and Naito was canceled.
They're
gonna reschedule it down the line because of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of events in Japan are being canceled already.
What's interesting is he brought up the Arnold Classic, and like that's in Ohio. The UFC has a card in Ohio the end of this month. Like that's something we got to think
when
about.
Is that part of the Arnold Classic? Is that in the same week, or is that?
I don't know.
When is the Arnold Classic? Is Arnold Classic right now?
I'm the wrong person.
Oh, it's going on right now. Okay, it's actually going on right now. I read that they're just doing the finals. Like only the finals are open to the public, but like as far as like just the general convention type stuff, it's basically all done. Yeah, it's gonna be very weird. Weird being the most positive outlook. If it's just weird.
Wash your hands, folks.
Wash your hands. I think there's a good chance that for the UFC at least, that they're gonna stop having live events of live crowds pretty soon and moving those pay-per-views actually to the UFC Apex Center. Apex Center, what's it called?
Yeah, the Apex.
The Apex, where they have like, and basically they're gonna have fights there. Actually, not contender series fights, but like big fights there with just family and friends, media, and the production crew.
God, so we could see like Romero, Israel, and Adesanya and just like hear all the... Oh my God, that'd be like really cool, but like I don't want it out of that scenario. I don't want... That would be cool. That's cool like to look at, but like I wish it wasn't because of this.
But it's going to be like that for everything. Like they're going to probably... I mean, they're going to be running... They're going to be doing baseball games for empty arenas. Because it's not like we can be by each other. It's big crowds. You just can't have big crowds. So, like, we're still going to be going to the grocery store, doing our things, but you're just going to avoid any big crowds because that's where everything gets crazy. And that's why, and Vegas is going to become a ghost town. Like, this place is just a giant petri dish of urine.
It's just putting it nicely.
I think that's its motto.
Like, what is, the final question he asks, he goes, would you cover fights from the comfort of your own home?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. But, you know, what I won't do right now, I won't fly international, that's for sure. Because you just might get trapped. You never know.
That's very true. Like, you might not get sick. They might not let you leave.
Yeah, because you go there, a breakout happens. They're like, all right, you're stuck there. And, like, I'm also curious, too. Like, dude, eventually, this is going to happen, too. Fighters, when they're especially getting toward that end of that, into the fight camp, they do get a little sick. They're depleted. You know, they're cutting weight. And like they start getting a runny nose, all of a sudden all their teammates at UFC be like, whoa, you got a runny nose. You gotta get I mean, like, we're gonna have fighters pull out of fights for just a slight cough. Because do you think that opponent wants to go, this is too risky? It's just like I think we're gonna have lots of fight cancellations because of this. I think there's gonna be so many unpredictable things that are gonna be happening and none of it's gonna be fun.
They got two major pay-per-views coming up in international. We got one in Perth and one in Sao Paulo.
Right. Where are you canceling events in the States? I mean, Brooklyn. Dude, Habib versus Ferguson. Are we going to go 0-5?
Well, that fight was never announced.
They didn't make a poster for it. There's not a press conference for it on Friday. We won't be covering it live.
Those aren't even real people.
No, not
There's
real
no people. Lightweight champion. Tony Ferguson's not a real person. He's not on like a 14-fight win streak. He definitely hasn't lost since before women were in the UFC. Yeah. That's true.
Another issue, it won't affect this fight because Habib's already in the States, but all these international fighters, I mean, they're going to start closing. I mean, if it gets it's even slightly worse, they're going to start closing borders and like you just won't be able to fight internationally. And like, so Izzy may win, may lose, whatever, but like, I don't know what's going on for that next fight. I don't know if he can come back in the States. You know,
like you saw the hoops that Wiley had to.
Yeah. What about Leach? What's his story?
I think he came. He left too. I think it was our own Guillermo Cruz wrote something, and one of the things he mentioned, like Yao Zhanan, I believe is her name. She beat Carolina.
Yeah.
Was like her, Wiley, and the Leach were all left China. I don't know where they went, but like he had written something up.
Yeah, and for those fighters, yeah, they can leave China for their training camp, but. They want to go back home. That's where they live. Eventually, you know, if they go back home, can they come out? You know, so that's the thing.
I can't remember if it was Embedded or Anatomy of a Fighter or Raptors. Like, there's so many vlogs going on this week. But Wiley was like, when she had to leave, she like called her mom and was like, this sucks. I have to leave.
Yeah. Honestly, you don't know when you're coming back. Ed, and your beautiful question.
And you're beautiful here. Anyway, do we have any more questions?
Yeah, we do.
We're running up on. We started 10 minutes late, so we'll go 10 minutes long.
Okay. Do.
Question number four. From the Seaside, who fights Ali Kinta next?
Where's he ranked? He lost to Hooker, right?
He's lost to Hooker and Cowboy. I know Alexander Hernandez had called him out, but he's now fighting.
What's Gregor Gillespie up to?
He just lost. He got head kicks by Kevin Lee.
He's still not there. I mean, I'm assuming he got up and left the cage.
I think Paul Felder mentioned Al as a possible opponent on Ariel's show. Like, if he doesn't retire, maybe Paul Felder. Because I think they've been like,
weren't they supposed to fight? They were on the Brooklyn card, right? Wasn't that?
I think so.
Yeah, the bus.
But even outside of that, I think they're. Like, maybe, like, they've been offered each other a few times. Like, the names has come across their contracts a few times or something. So, like, just get it. He's like, I've thought about Ali Akinta for so long, might as well fight him.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good one. There's a lot of lightweight, like, the if Kevin Lee wins, like, Charles Oliveira versus Ali Akinta, because Kevin Lee's not fighting Kevin. Like, Kevin Lee's not getting a third shot at Al.
Yeah.
So, like, Charles Oliveira's out there. We got Makhachev and Hernandez coming up. But this is all if Al wants to wait a little bit.
Yeah, it's fun fights for Al. It's, you know, he's good.
Next question. From fan of Mr. Stationary, and I will note his Twitter profile picture is a picture of my usual co-host, PT Carroll, holding up a giant crystal salt rock lamp. So, way to stay on brand, fan of, I believe fan of Mr. Stationary is the one that dubs PT Mr. Scissors. So, shout out to the longtime listener, Mr. Stationary. But thoughts on Nate throwing shade at McGregor? I don't know if you saw, for those of you not aware, Nate Diaz tweeted, didn't tag anyone, just said, what happened to your season? By now I was already back, or I don't know the exact phrasing, but basically Conor McGregor said that entering 2020, he viewed his fight against Cowboy as the start of his season, and wanted to fight 3-4 times this year, but has no fight announced, wanted to fight in March, but he said he wanted to fight in March before they made Izzy Romero official. So he's like, if they don't have the title fight on that, like, I'll fight anyone on that card. Now there's supposedly Gaethje's been put in front of him. I know I want that fight. I want to watch that fight. I don't know when that happens. But what do you think of Nate, to answer Mr. Stationary's question, what do you think of Nate throwing shade at McGregor?
I think Nate's a little bored right now. So, like, all right, I mean, just, dude, like, we can talk about it for a while, but, man, this literally could be Nate just high, taking a poop on his phone, like, boom, send. All right. Whatever. It's cute. That's about it for me.
Like, it's,
I want to see the fight. I thought, as soon as the second fight happened, I came at that, like, ooh, can't wait till they fucking book that third one next week. Like, yeah. But I'm just kind of like, whatever.
I still want that
fight. I want it, but I'm not emotionally invested in it anymore.
Anything else you want to say on the? We got a few more questions.
Wait, one more question. Throw this one up there. Here we go.
From Mark, a lot of numbers. Mark 1204-1202. All right. So I guess he was the, like, 1/12 millionth person that won Mark on Twitter. It's Hooker versus Dustin, the fight to make. Does 3 rounds favor Dustin or Hooker more? It'd be a killer fight on the Aussie card, but I can't see it being a three-rounder personally. Hashtag the A-side. I agree with Mr. Mark right here. I like that fight a ton for both of those guys, but Dustin Poirier himself said, I got 5 rounds for you. So when Dan Hooker goes, like, who should I fight next or so-and-so, or I can't remember the exact phrasing Dan Hooker said, but Poirier was like, I got 5 rounds for you. If they want a 5-round card, like, I'm 100% in for 5 rounds of Poirier and Hooker. I don't want a 3-round fight between these two. We got ESPN cards coming up. We got ESPN. We got Friday night cards coming up.
Who's a favorite more? I don't think it necessarily favors any guy anymore.
I would think in a 5-round fight, I'd probably favor Poirier. He's been in a bunch of them. He's had those 5-round wars with Gaethje and Eddie and...
Yeah, but he's been a bunch of wars. Hooker now has that experience.
He's also, Poirier got, like, run, like, I think Khabib ran through Poirier.
Yeah.
And then that, but he didn't take a ton of damage. So, and then Hooker's also been run through Barbosa, who just beat the soul out of him. Like, Hooker's body collapsed. Like, his body gave out before he wanted to stop. So, I like this fight a lot.
No, it's a great fight. I just, I would like it to be 5 rounds, selfishly, but as far as for their own brain damage wise, I don't want it 5 rounds, but just as a selfish MMA fan, just bleed, bro. Yeah. 5 rounds. I would hope the UFC, if it's not a main event, I would like the UFC just in general to put guys like that, two top five lightweights, even if it's a co-main event for a pay-per-view, I would love it to be 5 rounds. But I want those guys paid to be a 5-round fight. I don't want them, because those are longer training camps. You need more. You got to pay for more training partners. It's just harder on your body, and you're gonna potentially take much more damage in that extra 10 minutes. So I would hope Dustin and Hooker, if they are gonna fight five rounds, won't get that paper to match it. But it's an awesome fight. Yeah,
10 out of 10 fight.
Cool.
We had other questions.
Yeah, I can pull them up. Here we go. One more question.
What was the question?
There we go.
Another question from Mark, I assume directed for me, is what happened in Akita coming true in 2020?
Yes.
100%. Akita, Otomo, the creator, director, and mastermind of the Akita movie and manga, saw this film. You know, you've read Akira?
Akira?
I forgot, you're wearing a camel hat. That's right on brand for you. You read Akira? You've seen Akira? You've seen Akira? Hey, boy, you seen Akira?
Yeah, I like drinking. I like watching some Akira and drinking some sake.
Have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't, actually.
Really? So in that book, the 2020 Olympics are coming up in Neo Tokyo, and the government is advising... like a shutdown because of a potential pandemic.
Really?
Yeah. And guess where the Olympics are in 2020?
Tokyo.
Guess what's happening right now?
Pandemic.
Possible pandemic. Damn. That's what's happening.
Smoke bomb.
That's, which means there is a... so for those of you who have... Or like Casey, I think you're the only person in this room that's never seen Akira. The hot girl's seen Akira. Esther's seen Akira. The hot girl's read Akira.
The hot wife
has seen Akira. It is basically, if you watch Stranger Things, what's her name? Eleven? Is that her name? I've never seen it. Eleven is basically Akira. She was like the one that stood out above the rest. They tried to turn her mind into a weapon, and then he eventually in the book he reemerges. In the movie he does not.
So is the book based on the movie?
No, it is not.
Oh, okay.
It's not. The movie is an abridged version of the book. Supposedly, they wanted to make... What's his name? Who's the guy who made the Thor movie that you really liked?
What's his name again?
Taika Waititi, something like that.
Yeah. Apparently Oscar winner.
Apparently, he wanted to make a live-action version of Akira, and it sounded awful.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm down for a live-action Akira movie as long as it's good. That sounded bad. Any other questions?
Last question. That's an excellent question.
From Sean Denny. Denny Rant's another longtime commenter. Outside the A-side, which crystal will stop a coronavirus pandemic? Now, I don't want to give you an answer because then people might listen to this and be like, well, Jose said to wear it. Jose said to wear pyrene around my neck and I won't get the coronavirus. I don't know. So I don't know. You know who's a good person to ask? The Crystal Queen Jessica or Pizzi, because he seems to have a massive affinity for the crystals now.
Yeah, I'm going to check my email. I'm sure Mike Pence is emailing us asking, hey guys, little help here.
I have a handful of pyrite and a handful of quartz. Which one can I throw away? Quartz?
Quartz.
Yeah, it's for the immune system.
Quartz is for the immune system. Balancing. There you go. So I guess it's quartz.
Okay, so yeah, that's your answer. That's the official answer from the A-side. If you don't want to get coronavirus, go to your local crystal distributor and buy some quartz and just wrap it around your neck, and your ears, up your nose. Like actually grind it up into maybe like a powder form and just, you know, lather it up in your hands. Sing Happy Birthday twice, and that's about how long you should do it for. And pandemic free.
And then you can go to the 2020 Olympics
in Tokyo and watch Akira.
So quartz equal Olympics. That's the moral of the story.
And I just got a bunch of emails from our lawyer saying delete this. Do not put this out there. And everything we said was a lie.
Was it though? Anyway, do we have any more questions? Is that a wrap?
That
is a wrap on the A side this week.
We got some promos though.
Oh, we do have a promo.
Oh wait. Yeah. And our first promo.
Sorry about the wrapping.
It's his birthday.
It is?
Well, we didn't get anything for your birthday. So.
What is this? I'm so confused.
Rip it.
My birthday was December 2nd, by the way. I sent it to his screen. Oh man. This is the greatest present I've ever received. For those of you who don't know, Esther Lynn is, of course, the greatest photographer in sports. There's one particular photo that I've been asking for enlarged, solely because, as you know, I'm a big Naruto fan, anime fan. So is Israel Adesanya. And he hit, that's right, Casey, the Rock Lee pose against Anderson Silva, the greatest middleweight of all time, I might add. And I go, I need this photo blown up. Look at that. This is the most beautiful thing. Thank you so much, Esther. This is literally the coolest thing I've ever seen on the A-side.
So this is on canvas, right?
Yes, on canvas.
This is, without a doubt, the coolest thing I've ever seen. This is the cool... This is like as soon as... Because like we get to see the photos before you guys get to see the photos because Esther sends us the photos to post.
And we go, holy shit, get that out there quick.
Yeah. So like she would... Like every now and then she'll message us and be like, oh, like the Robert Whittaker one you got. She messaged us and was like, I just captured the most violent thing I've ever captured. This photo, no heads up. I just saw this and my mind was just blown. This is the coolest photo I've ever seen in any sport. And now it's going to be hung in my apartment forever. 10 out of 10. Thank you so much, Esther. Mm-hmm. I'm at a loss for words, so I have no promo. Do you have a promo, Casey?
Joe B, you get a rematch. And Megan Anderson, Felicia Spencer fights Amanda Nunes next. Felicia Spencer gets the title shot next. Without a doubt. It was a travesty if it's not Felicia Spencer.
I think Megan wants to fight Jermaine.
That sounds awesome, too.
It's a fun fight, too. So 10 out of 10. I have no promo because I'm at a loss for words right now on this amazing photo. But as always, you can watch this replay of this on YouTube. YouTube.com/MMAFighting. Forward slash MMAFighting. Twitter at MMAFighting. Instagram at MMAFighting. DOTCOM. Just go to MMAFighting.com and find all of your content. We're here in Las Vegas. You can find all of your UFC 248. Content on our YouTube channel. It's going to be great. This will be on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, blah, blah, blah. That's Soy Boy Casey. I'm Weeb Jose Youngs. We're out.
Oh, I had a question up the whole time. Whoops.
Find us at the workouts.
Find us at the workouts and say hi.
Give us some quartz. We don't want to die.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.